This podcast is recorded on stolen and unceded Aboriginal land.
We acknowledge the First Nations and elders of this country and join their calls for justice. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Test. Is this political content getting through to you via social media, or are we being shadow banned for our incredible politics and opinions by fucking Meta and the tech giants? That is the question. I didn't know much about this. I saw yourself, Jack Toohey, and Hannah Ferguson from Cheek Media posting about this. I had no idea that this was coming. I don't know if we had any heads up this is coming. What is going on with Meta limiting the amount of political content that people can listen to and watch and understand on socials?
They kind of sneakily put it out on Threads like a month ago, and they rolled it out on Threads first before Instagram. They put it on their blog, but who's reading the Meta blog?
My homepage, yes.
I was kind of quietly hopeful that they were just going to have the original backlash from Threads and go, oh, maybe this is a bad idea, but no, they went through. So, yeah, it's pretty scary for creators like me, I would say, or just basically anyone in the political space.
So this is a statement from Meta. We want Instagram and Threads to be a great experience for everyone. If you decide to follow accounts that post political content, we don't want to get between you and their posts, but we also don't want to proactively recommend political content from accounts you don't follow. So we're extending our existing approach to how we treat political content. We won't proactively recommend content about politics on recommendation services across Instagram and Threads. If you still want these posts recommended to you, you will have a control to see them. So they've automatically limited political content, right? So that's the default. If you want to undo that, then you have to go through this process of going to the thing on the Instagram and going down and choosing limited content and deselecting political content, right?
Yeah, and the kinds of things that like they're referring to as political content includes everything. It's like civil and social rights, crime, economy, education, environmental politics, guns, health, immigration, political values and governance, security and foreign policy. And I went deep in the Meta backend to find out like what they're talking about, because they say social topics. Social topics are now banned on social media. And one of the examples they give is something that you have to get ad authorization, because of course you can still pay to put political content onto Meta. If you give them money, they'll put it into our feeds. That's fine.
Great. Okay, good.
One of the examples they say you need authorization is a statement like, it's time for us all to stand up and demand equal rights for women. That requires Meta say, yep, that's okay to say.
To be fair, I do not want that shit in my feed. Okay, get that fuck out of my feed. That is poisonous, toxic, woke bullshit, and I do not want to read about it as I'm scrolling through my porn and animal videos. Thanks.
We need better policies in place to make education affordable? No. But win a scholarship to a private school? Yes.
Oh,
that's
God.
Fine. So, like, when I was reading the back end of that website, it seemed like it was a parody of itself. But no, it's real.
And so what is actually going on here? What is the actual logic to this? I mean, Facebook, I remember, has tried to go through this big brand that, and obviously has got into shitloads of trouble for things like misinformation and its relationship to the news media. We've also got this big argument playing out and between Meta saying they're not going to pay news organizations for the news that they post anymore after that deal that was struck under the last coalition government where they give millions of dollars to news outlets and stuff. What is the real story going on here? What is the benefit for Meta? Because, and I ask because the other narrative we would hear is that people getting angry about news stories is a massive engagement driver, and that's what these social media companies want, right? For people to get angry and to post their furious political opinions, and the division and the hate, you know, perpetuates itself. That's probably good for business, no?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's making the app more brand safe. So, I mean, that's the thing. I think advertisers don't necessarily, it's kind of like what's happened on Twitter. I refuse to ever call it by its other name. That brands aren't comfortable advertising against, like, above and below kind of toxic discourse. But there's like a wide gap between toxic discourse in the comment section based on misinformation and racism and bigotry.
Yes.
And just like discussion about reality, which is inherently political. So, and like the thing that I pointed out, like when this first came out, was that if you don't like in terms of like progress, if you're someone that benefits from progress not carrying out, like taking place, then you just make something political. I mean, we've seen that with climate change. You know, it's not a political issue. It's just an existential threat to humanity and all living things. But you make it political, and then that now means that it's not going to be, we can't talk about it on social media. So like we can just, like, who knows what the next political thing will be. It'll be like, oh, you can't talk about Dune anymore because I don't know.
Well, it is a critique of resource capitalism and colonialism, and it is like actually pretty left wing in some ways. I guess Paul Sider eventually becomes something of a fascist leader. Anyway, we can't go down this rabbit hole. But
okay, nerd. Okay,
dude, you're on a Greens podcast, all right? Let's all just.
Sorry, you just. Look, I'm not up to date on Dune yet. I haven't seen the second one, so.
It's so good, man.
I'll talk Star Wars, which is also work. So,
yeah. Yeah, I can't watch that anymore. Too many people of color in lead roles. But so, and am I getting this right in terms of recommendation, which Hannah talks about on the Czech Media video? So, if I choose to follow political content and fantastic content creators such as self Jack Tui, will I still get that content, and it will just be other people won't have your content recommended to them because of this limiting of political content? If I've chosen to choose to follow Jack Tui, will I still be able to see your stuff as regularly as I have previously, or no?
The theory is, well, I mean, what they're saying is that yes, you will be able to. So like if you follow a creator, they're not going to get in the way of that. I don't believe that.
Yes.
because just like the way that the algorithm works by showing a small amount of your followers and then a few people outside of that. And then if people are engaging, then it will show it to more of your followers and more people outside of that. And then it keeps going until you eventually go viral if the video is good enough. Mm. And so I, you know, like a lot of creators go, oh, I've been shadow banned, or like, oh, you know, my reach has been neutered or whatever. Like there's a lot of that kind of shit going on. But when I posted about this the other night, just on my Instagram stories, I have 200,000 followers. For about 2 hours, I had 200 viewers on my story. So
Jesus.
I don't know maths, but that's not a very good kind of level of reach. And that's not normal. So, and that was me complaining about Meta. So I mean, we can get conspiratorial about that, but I wouldn't have a following if my video in the first place, my big housing crisis video, hadn't been shown to people that didn't follow me.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's inherently political, the housing crisis. So that there's no way that video would have been served to as many people as it was under this new set of rules. So like it's just stopping the future generation of creators from doing that. It's stopping me from being able to do that again and reach a wider audience. It's stopping anyone that wants to talk about anything that matters reaching people that care. Or and don't yet, care.
Yes. And of course, and obviously this is going to disadvantage the left more than the right, right? Like particularly when our leftist political critiques are about massive corporations like Meta or like Mark Zuckerberg or billionaires or people who want to actually change the status quo to benefit ordinary people. That's not great for business. So that's going to be limited across the board.
We're less likely to take money from billionaires to boost our posts to see, for it to go to more audiences. So we will see more of the advanced Australians and, you know, what we saw in the Voice campaign with Fair Australia or whatever, just flooding, you know, our feeds because they have the money to pay. Although they're grassroots, of course.
fucking AstroTurf bullshit. All right, and so what have you done? You're collating more of your content onto Substack. Is that what some creators are doing to try and circumvent this?
Yeah, so I guess having that direct connection, it's been a bit of a wake-up call. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of diversified across a few different platforms, but, you know, with the TikTok ban in the States potentially happening and then talks about that happening here as well. So, yeah, move people over to my Substack. It's basically just creating more work for me to do because I now got to write articles or provide some value there as well as where I'd normally post my videos. So, but I think having that direct relationship, try not to clog people's inboxes with, you know, too many emails. And we'll see what happens. Maybe YouTube is the place I'm going to have to go first, but that's also owned by billionaires. So,
is it. I mean, I'm just, and we'll get to this, and this is a cynical plug, but I'm about to release a special on YouTube. So I'm sort of following a lot of this stuff. And Yes, there are lots of comedians who have had their comedy specials throttled because their comedy, in the course of doing their comedy routine on YouTube, which remember is supposed to be the bastion of free speech and free ideas, yada, yada, yada. But if they happen to use like a word like faggot, for example, in context, even from queer comedians who are using that term ironically, or if you say, you know, cunt, for example, like these words are being throttled and age limited and restricted. And so, yeah, the free speech paradise of YouTube is once again being subjected to them wanting to make as much money as possible, because if you age restrict a video, then they can run fewer ads on it and then fewer people watched it. So why would YouTube bother pushing that particular video when they can push other stuff at the same time? Once again, an unregulated capitalist market destroys everything, including the very liberal values that liberals who like free markets claim to value and protect.
Yeah, it's all shit.
Oh, mate, you've got the serious danger vibe immediately.
Now, let's talk about the smug politics of the Greens, all of the red stuff in the middle of the watermelon. Does everyone have a hyphen in their name in this party?
We're stuck with the hosts of Chapo Shithouse podcast.
Serious danger to Australia.
This is a podcast about green politics in Australia. This is not an official Greens Party podcast. It is made possible with the help of the Green Institute and produced by Michael the Griff Griffin. And if this YouTube video doesn't get a million views, it's because the ruling class is stopping it from reaching the people. I'm Tom Ballard, coming to you from Gooditjmara country, from my hometown of Warrnambool. And first of all, apologies for the lateness of this episode. A few unforeseen circumstances. Emerald's got some stuff going on at the moment. Can't join us this week for personal reasons. We wish you love and solidarity, Emerald Moon. We hope you're doing okay. But I'm delighted to be joined by this very special guest co-host joining us from Gadigal country. He's a filmmaker, advocate, a viral content creator until recently, I guess, until Meta stopped that happening. Jack Toohey is here. Hello, Jack. Thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be screaming. I normally spend Sunday morning screaming into the void because I'm watching Insiders.
Yes.
At least now I can scream and maybe someone will hear me. So
yeah, some people will listen. I think this is basically the vibe. I guess it's later. We've been premiering the episode during Insiders sometimes, which of course has annoyed some elements of our audience because they're all fucking nerds who are of course watching Insiders as well. And then they can watch their Serious Danger, the correct Insiders take, I would say. You DJ'd last night. How did it go?
It's good. Yes, very, very busy. Went to the Swans game prior to that, and the Swans got up 3 in a row. So happy about that. I'm just really trying to get into the AFL spirit this year. Just kind of get amongst it.
Have you not previously been an AFL fan?
I've always been a Swannies fan, but I'm just trying to like take a leaf out of Melbourne's book and just get around. You know, going to a game, going to the pub, DJing at the pub. You know, doing it all.
Love to see it. People would be very familiar with your work. Again, you have a wider reach than we do here at Serious Danger. And particularly over the past year, I've been really impressed consistently by both the detail, the energy, and the politics of your political content. You mentioned your housing crisis video. You went to Canberra. You chatted to a whole bunch of MPs. Your post around Australian colonial history on 26 this year I thought was fantastic and really important. I mean, just briefly, would you mind sort of summing up where you're coming from when it comes to political content and a little bit about your political worldview, if you're prepared to put a label on such a thing?
I mean, I don't think it will come as any shock to anyone that I'm a inner city lefty.
Yeah.
And I've been called as such by the you know, the Daily Mails and the news.coms of the world. I don't know. I've always been politically active since I was, a teenager. Just, caring about people and the planet that we live on. I know, it's just so crazy that people can do that.
Woke.
Yeah, ever since I kind of finished school and kind of was going to all, the protests that I could, I started my career out as a photographer and making video content, particularly around the music industry. So there was kind of like a nice kind of connection between music festival photography and protest photography, I found. Yeah. And I always felt the most kind of alive or myself when I was photographing protests, because I felt like I was having some, share of impact. Mm. And so anyway, I owned a video production company, a photography company for most of my 20s. Last year, I made the decision to step away from that and focus on trying to make content that had more of that impact I was also planning to take 6 months off and just travel around the bush. But damn, Meta made me go viral before I left. So I had to actually figure out what I was doing with my life and see if this whole being a creator thing could be a sustainable lifestyle and business choice. And turns out it's not. So
hence the DJing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, I really hope this new change doesn't fuck up your business model too much here, but, I hope you find your way through, because I think the stuff you're putting out there is really, really great and important and, you know, not explicitly partisan, I suppose, but something I've noticed is that, yes, you are rare in the Australian leftist content creator world in that you are, you know, prepared to take a few swipes at Labor, and you're not just a Labor hack who's prepared to defend every Labor policy that gets out there. But I don't know, do you have strong opinions about the Greens and Labor, and do you put yourself in those kind of partisan categories, or how do you look at the political landscape at the moment?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear, like, from the content. I try very hard not to be perceived or to be biased in my content. I try and just put the facts out as they are. And usually those facts show that things are fucked and we need to fix them. And there is only really, you know, one party and some independents that are genuinely having any discussion about fixing them. So as long as Labor and the coalition just middle around the edges and stand in the way of progress, I'm always going to give them shit. Yeah. I've, you know, there's photos of me swirling around, you know, green suit next to Adam Bandt and, potentially, you know, handing out how to vote cards at some stage. So, but I do try and keep that a little bit separate from my content, but here I am on a,
you know, I know. Well, I hope podcast, it doesn't fucking ruin it for you. I mean, it's probably a factor in some people not engaging with our show for the terms of like Greens, no thank you. But what's interesting about your content, I think, is that you are applying a leftist critique. You are basically, you know, explaining why the Labor policy proposal is almost certainly not enough. And you're clearly speaking to massive audiences, right? Like if you take off the colors and the partisan banner on stuff, and you talk about the facts and you explain why certain shit doesn't work and what we need to do to actually address these massive crises, they obviously, you know, find massive audiences. So, and this sounds like cope or whatever, but I sincerely believe that there are a lot more people who are actually much closer to the Greens policy perspective and the worldview than they're prepared to admit to themselves, because, yes, they just have always said, I don't vote Greens. The Greens are weirdos, you know. It's like ABC's Vote Compass, and then you've got a whole bunch of Labor people saying, your program is broken. It tells me that I'm a Greens voter when I vote Labor. It's like, no, I think you actually, the issues that you care about are actually different, my friend.
Well, that's what I think I'm very driven to hopefully engage people into actually caring about policy. And it is the colors and, you know, it's all part of it. And there's this kind of like, we've inherited this kind of, we look at the parties like sporting teams, which is not really how politics is meant to work. And, you know, the word politics and policies, there's some similar letters there. And sometimes we don't really pay attention to the policies. We pay attention to the politics and the policies that we've had in place for the last 40 years have, you know, completely, you know, destroying the planet, and, you know, and really the wealth disparity is crazy. And like, that's just a fact. And the policy settings that we've had in the past have been the ones that continue to be shipped by the major parties, here and, you know, around the world. And that is not the way to fix the problems that those policies created. So again, we should just maybe use the policies, at least not do that. Ideally have some good policy, but at the very least, just not keep doing, like not keep throwing petrol on the flame.
Yeah. Step one, stop doing the bad shit. Well said, Jack Tilley. All right, delighted that you're here on the show. We are going to try and squeeze all this in within the hour. We're going to check in on the Tassie state election results. The fact that the episode's a bit late this week means that we get to do that, which is exciting because it's very, very interesting indeed. We're going to find out if the Labor government is walking away from religious freedom, /LGBTQ+ rights, which they promised to protect. And we are discussing, if we have time, the politics of Holly Valance, a.k.a. the voice of her generation. Big thanks to our new patrons, Michael, Fiona, Ash, Niall, who is coming along to our Melbourne show. Hello, mate. Thank you very much. And Ben, we love you. For just $3 a month, you get bonus Serious Danger content and helps us support the show and make it happen. We are doing live shows in April in NAM Melbourne on Saturday, April the 6th at 1:30 p.m. at Comedy Republic with special guest Osman Farooqi. We announced last week he's going to be joining us on that show. Tickets are pretty close to sell out. Some people were going to the event page for last year's show and saying, oh, it's all sold out. That's not the case. We should probably take that old event page down, to be fair. If you're in NAM and you want to come along to that on the 6th, we'd love to see you. Mianjin Brisbane on Saturday, April 27th. Our 2 p.m. show at Good Chat Comedy Club is totally sold out. We haven't even announced a guest, but you've already sold that out. We love you. We appreciate that. We are in discussions with Good Chat to add an extra show at midday before that show. And if we do that, we will hopefully make it cheaper. If you've already bought a ticket to the 2 p.m. show, if you want a Serious Danger double feature on that day, we will give you a little discount for that. Details to come. Finally, before we get into the content, very selfish plug. I am releasing my special It Is I on YouTube this Tuesday, March 26th at 9 p.m. It's totally free, so you're not asking for any money. There's a whole bunch of political content in there. If you like Serious Danger and me, then I think you'll like this show. It's me yelling about Australia for an hour. 9 p.m. is when it premieres on the 800-pound Gorilla Media channel. Also, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. Humiliatingly, we have more subscribers on Serious Danger than I do on my own YouTube channel that I've had for a decade. I've only recently started taking it seriously and actually posting content on there. So if you don't mind subscribing to me, if you subscribe to Serious Danger, come on over to @TomBallardAUS on YouTube. I'd love to see you there. And I'll put a link in the show notes for all the links for the special on Spotify and like audio as an album as well if you want to listen to It As I just and not look at my face. That's the end of the plugs.
Interesting reaction coming in as I look at the total vote right now. Labor's at only 21.9%. The Liberals are at 44.8%. This from a Labor source right now speaking to Six News, and I quote, "This is an absolute disgrace. What the fuck has happened? Intervention is desperately needed." So that's from one Labor source in the past couple of minutes. So I don't know if some already throwing in the towel here, yeah, 22% of the vote Labor is at right now statewide.
All right, Jack, last night while you were DJing on the decks or watching Sydney Swans, were you also following the Tasmanian state election results?
I'm ashamed to say that no, I wasn't. it's just there's the Bass Strait or something about it just kind of just makes it hard for me to.
Oh, mainland arrogance. That's what that is.
I'm sorry, everyone. Tassie, we love you. We love you.
Have you been to Lutruwita, Tassie much?
Look, I have been to Tassie, and I'm sure a lot of people from Tassie will shudder at the reason why I was there for Dark Mofo, and I was only there for Dark Mofo. So yeah, so I need to get amongst it a lot more. I know that.
It's all right.
I was there for work. So,
Dark Mofo is cool. Yeah. I mean, you know, as long as you don't move there and help drive up the property prices, I don't think they begrudge you too much.
I offended someone the other day. I was up in Lismore and I said, they asked me if I'd spent much time in the Northern Rivers. And I said, yeah, I go to Splendor every year. And they gave me a frown.
You fucking weekender. Well, these election results were a doozy. It is going to take a long time to actually get a clear picture of what is happening. This will take weeks, but I think it's very safe to say that Liberal Premier Jeremy Rockliffe's plan to have an election to elect a strong and stable government, because there was just chaos in the Tasmanian Parliament, that has not worked out very well for him whatsoever. A reminder, this was a snap election. The stadium was a big issue. Two people left the Liberal Party over issues surrounding the stadium. They became independents. Jeremy Rockliffe said this is unacceptable. Let's have an election. This election was due to expand the size of the Tasmanian Parliament to 35 members. And while the Liberals still seem to look like they're going to win the most number of seats, they almost certainly will have to form some kind of minority government. So the minority government will continue. What that looks like is still TBC. Rockliffe claimed victory last night. Labor did not necessarily say that we won't form government. We'll still sort of wait and see. When I tuned into the coverage, I came home from a gig, turned on the TV, Anthony Green was saying the Greens are going to be in a very powerful position in the new government, which is exactly – in the new parliament, rather, which is what you really love to see and hear. Good night for the Greens. Shout out to Pat Kreiner, who coined the term Van Greeman's land. I don't know if that will catch on, but I guess that we will see. As of time of recording, I think we're still, these are all still pretty accurate. So you've got almost a 12% swing against the Liberals, but that doesn't lose them any seats. They're still hanging on to 12 at this stage. The Labor Party, 1% swing to them. They've got 10 seats. Tassie Greens have a 1% swing to them. We've got 3 seats at this stage. On track for 4 is the general plan. The ABC projects the Liberals are likely to hold 14 seats, Labor 10, the Greens 4, and at least one seat will be held by an independent, with the remaining seats of about 7 still in doubt. You need 18 seats to form a majority government. We just don't think that's going to happen. Jackie Lambie Network is going to pick up some of them. We're not sure where. That's sort of really the wild card and what they would do when it comes to a coalition. Jackie Lambie very much against the Rockliffe government, particularly on the issue of the stadium. The Greens have been re-elected in Franklin and Clark, won a new seat in Braddon. Congratulations to Cecily Russell for that. Possibly in Lyons with our old mate Tabitha Badger. Now, we had Tabitha on the show. Her name is Tabitha Badger. She's a Greens candidate. What more do you fucking want? There is a decent chance that she could get up in Lyons, and we are crossing our fingers for that. And, I mean, if Labor were to move into a minority government, Jack, they would have to work with the Greens. And that would be crazy because Rebecca White, the Labor leader, she said that they would never work with the Greens. And they, she made that commitment and that promise so that it would never, ever happen. Do you think they'll stick to their word?
Oh, look, I reckon Labor have always stuck to their word. So they'll have to and just let the Liberals be in government because otherwise – they'd be going back on a lot. They'd be lying.
Yes. That's the correct progressive position, is to let the Liberals form government. That's the right thing to do. Do you think this is ever going to change, this rhetoric that Labor's going to push out, that like we're never, like they say before an election, we're never going to work with them. And then, of course, if it gives them the opportunity to form government, then that's exactly what they'll do.
I mean, I think it's going to have to change. Like all the kind of conventional wisdom is that this is going to happen more and more as we move forward into the future. And people realize that, you know, minority governments aren't so bad, or remember that they're not so bad, you know, given that we had one that was quite effectual, not so long ago. So, I think this is hopefully like the last kind of election cycle where we have this kind of the pearl clutching of Labor before they kind of, you know, nationwide have to kind of read the writing on the wall and start working with, you know, a decent size of the population that want more progressive policies.
Yeah. I mean, I think, something like 20% of the whole vote in Tassie has gone to, that might even be outside of the Greens, right? So, you know, 80% of the vote goes to the Liberal, Labor and the Greens total. And then the remaining 20% going to some form of independence, including the Jackie Lambie Network, which as I understand is a loose grouping of independents. So again, the same trend we've seen across the board, the secular decline of major party votes or establishment politics votes is going down. Obviously the Greens can be the benefit of that, but also we've been around for, you know, more than 30 years now. So yes, maybe even some votes might peel away from the Greens for some more independence and stuff. But basically, people hate the majors and they've got to fucking readjust to that reality. Erica Betts is back. You'll be very pleased to hear he's returning to politics. He's won a seat in Franklin. Again, I tuned into his interpretation. He was on the election panel on the ABC and they asked him for his thoughts on these results, this massive 12% swing against the Liberals. And you'll never believe it, Jack, but Erica Betts seems to think that the Tasmanian Liberals' problem is that they're too left-wing, specifically citing the proposed law that the Tasmanian Liberals ran on to introduce a 5% levy on all short-stay accommodation in the state to be paid by the visitor, not the owner. So, of course, the housing crisis in Tassie is fucking insane. Even the Liberals would forced to do something about stuff like Airbnb. And also they're also proposing removing landlords' right to reject tenants' right to have pets. So slightly strengthening tenancy laws in Tasmania and allowing you to have a goddamn pet. This, of course, was just passed. This, and Erica Betts is like, we'll have to look at some of the policies and commitments we made during our election. That's the message that the Tasmanian people are sending us. Landlords should be able to ban your puppy from your rental. That's the lesson that he took from this.
Everyone knows that doing the bare minimum is the cash cry of the far left.
Radical communist policies. I know. I just love the fact that you, how can you be the anti-puppy party and not realize that you're the bad guys?
He's just, I hate the fact that he's back, honestly. I thought we'd seen the end of him. What's that Muppet that he looks like? It's one of the Muppets. The bird.
Like the old... Sam the Eagle?
I don't know. I shouldn't have brought up this reference if I wasn't going to back it up, was I?
I also, I mean, people like the fact that he does have this distant relative who was a Nazi. And, you know, people shouldn't be held accountable for their relatives, but it is a little bit funny. Also, last night in South Australia, there was the Dunstan by-election. This is the former seat, seat of former Liberal Premier Stephen Marshall. He left Parliament. It was the most marginal seat in the state. It was very close. The rest of the count will be completed on Monday, but it does look like Labor has picked that one up from the Liberals. The Greens candidate, Katie McCusker, recorded a swing of 8.8%. taking the primary vote for the Greens from 13% in 2022 up to 22% this time around. That's a pretty extraordinary result. That's kind of striking distance. Again, remember Max Chandler-Mather was 23% primary vote in Griffith, I believe, and then fucking won it. Some are saying that she was very successful because I hosted the campaign launch event. You know, that's not for me to say. That will be debated. The historians will discuss that in the future. But congrats, Katie McCusker. That's a pretty great result for the Greens. And yes, Dunstan may very well turn green in coming elections. There was also 2% of the vote in the Dunstan by-election for the Australian Family Party, which I only learnt about very recently. This is founded by old mate Bob Day of the Family First Party. I believe it's the continuing legacy of Family First. Do you remember Bob Day, Jack? Does this ring a bell?
It does ring a bell, and not one that I want to be ringing again. I hadn't thought about Family First for a while. So.
I know. We thought he was dead, but he's back. This party launched in 2020, apparently. I think they were registered in 2021. A little bit of background about Australian family. Former Family First Senator Bob Day has announced the launch of a new political party, the Australian Family Party. Day said the Australian Family Party was formed to counter the insidious influence of the Greens and the disappointment of the major parties. Day said the new party was based on six key principles: family resilience, family economics, family technology, free to speak, free to believe, free to work. I couldn't be bothered looking any further into that, but those are the six principles if you're wondering about the Australian Family Party.
Lots of F alliteration, you know.
Yeah, yeah, lots of Fs, I guess. Yeah, six Fs, everyone. And basically there's a quote here from Day saying that, you know, in 2016 the Coalition and the Greens teamed up to get rid of the group voting tickets, which was deeply anti-democratic, this insane system and the preference deals, which is how Family First maintained their presence in the Parliament, basically. And Bob Day sort of says that's how the Greens got involved. Under the group voting tickets, minor parties came to arrangements with each other to combine their votes to get ahead of the Greens. The Coalition Greens deal ended that. Liberals and Nationals can rant and rave all they like about Adam Band to the Greens, but they have only themselves to blame. They've become the Greens' enablers. So he set up the Australia First Party and they got 2% of the vote in this Dunstan by-election. I don't know if they're just running in South Australia, but they're fighting for the families, and I think that's important. I mean, you know, and the Greens were anti-family. We hate the family. So I guess if they value family values and they want to see families do well, then they're going to take that fight on, you know?
Oh, look, it's the kind of the same as YouTube, right? We don't want to hear, you know, your comedy special. That's family values. You're going to age restrict that shit.
Maybe Bob Day's involved in that and silencing me. You cunt.
What does family values mean? Like, everyone has a family in some way and with wildly different values. It's one of those things that doesn't mean anything.
Yes. Well, of course, the constant, the eternal irony, you know, right-wing people who love capitalism and the free market who also want to protect the family, ignoring the fact that, you know, economic pressures is often what destroys families and making people work their fucking guts out, putting them in financial strain, allowing landlords to charge families whatever rent they fucking want, you know, all these material circumstances that are involved in a free market, you know, that's actually what tears family apart a lot of the time, not pornography or rap music or sexual liberation. That would be my particular take. But
yeah, losing their minds over the right to disconnect, but that would allow, you know, the parents to talk to their children, you know, after
spend
work.
Spend more time with your family, yeah.
Courts knew this and nothing more. Now it's my rights versus yours.
Another big story from this week was the discussion around Labor's religious discrimination / freedom bill. I still don't know what to fucking call this thing. And the joys of bipartisanship and where this is going to go. Days before the release of the Australian Law Reform Commission's report into legislative options for religious freedom and discrimination, we learned that the Labor government had two draft bills on this issue, but wasn't going to introduce either of them or pursue either of them without support from the coalition. Okay, so the fates of queer people out there, students, queer students and queer teachers, particularly at religious schools across this country, are in the hands of Peter Dutton and the coalition. What could possibly go wrong is the question. You crossed this sort of story. Do you remember this sort of background to all this, Jack? This religious discrimination shit show that's been dragging on for a very long time?
Yes, it has been going on for a long time. I hate this kind of approach by Albo. Like, it is, as you say, just going to harm, you know, queer kids and teachers for longer. And putting it in the hands of Peter Dutton, like, I don't understand. It's just because Albo's scared of the media and what the beat up's going to be if they don't have bipartisan support. Just work with the Greens and the Independents. They're right there. They're ready to do it.
Hello. We're
and they
here.
Care.
And we like good things. So maybe you should work with the people who want actually good things, who are actually closer to your political worldview in theory, rather than working with the opposition. I mean, heaven forbid that you might have to have a debate about a contentious issue in politics. Imagine.
And didn't some of the Liberal members, they crossed the floor about this last time it got up? And so we already know that there's contention within the coalition. So why, again, would we leave it up to them, a party that can't agree with themselves?
Figure it out. It doesn't make much sense. Bit of a brief background. Of course, the whole thing is a response to marriage equality. Marriage equality gets through. The coalition government says, okay, all right, gays, we lost. We dragged that out forever. And now to give us something, because Australia said yes to marriage equality, we need to legislate religious freedom. Philip Ruddock was talking about this for a long time. Eventually, this bill comes in under the coalition as the Religious Discrimination Bill. And it was supposed to protect people from being discriminated against on the basis of their religion and statements of belief. It was prohibiting religious vilification. In 2022, the bill passed the lower house with Labor support after being amended by Labor. Yes, Labor got amendments through, but they still voted for the bill, which also was a bit fucked. I think we can all remember. They were all very proud of themselves because they were wedging the coalition, but it was still pretty shitty. Some moderate libs crossed the floor over this idea of removing Section 38 of the Sex Discrimination Act, which gave religious schools the power to exclude staff or students based on sexual orientation, gender identity, marital status, or pregnancy. There was a big blow-up, particularly around the rights of trans students, which the bill didn't really protect, which the more moderate Liberal MPs were particularly concerned about, particularly the gay ones, I believe. And conservative religious groups were very upset about this. The bill was delayed until after the election to go through the Senate. And Labor said, if we win election, we're going to bring it back and we're going to protect religious freedom for everyone and everyone's going to be happy and everyone's going to love us and there will be no losers whatsoever. And we're going to both appeal to all the Labor voters who I guess send their kids to Catholic schools and also the powerful religious school lobby, but also we're going to keep all the LGBTQI+ advocacy groups on side and the queer community as well. And it's going to be easy and it's going to be great. So now it's trying to balance these two sort of parts of discrimination. They've asked the Law Reform Commission to look at it and they've basically split this into two separate bills, it seems, one with the Sex Discrimination Act amendments protecting children but not teachers and one with the anti-discrimination reforms adding religion as a protected attribute. So again, we'll hear this regular line, no one should be discriminated against for who they are. Or what they believe. So those two things are sort of lumped in the same category. Both you shouldn't be discriminated against because you're queer in any way or gay or trans or what have you, but also you shouldn't be discriminated against for your religious belief. Now, of course, the whole issue is when those two things come into conflict, right? Is someone being discriminated against for being a Christian if they fire a staff member who works at their school for coming out, for marrying their same-sex partner, for coming out as trans or what have you? Or is that just a blatant violation of workers' rights, which you think the Labor Party would be on board, even if they're at a religious school, a teacher, whether they're trans or gay, should just be able to live their lives and carry on practicing their faith as they see wish and teaching children, surely. I mean, this is like kind of the stickiness that no one seems to want to give a straight answer on. I was watching Richard Miles on Insiders this morning, and David Spears says, "Do you think a teacher should be fired from religious school for being gay?" And Richard Miles just equivocates and says, sort of, "Well, you see, it's very complicated, and we're looking at the legislation, yada yada yada." Do you see any kind of clear answers coming out of this debate? Is that the problem, that no one actually wants to literally take a position on the basic question as to whether a religious school has the right to fire someone for being queer?
Well, I mean, I think it just comes back to a problem that kind of permeates through all of our politics, is that it's a battle between making a policy that actually cares for people and kind of doing the bidding of the powerful people. And I think, you know, religious institutions have a lot of power in Australia. They're tax exempt.
Yes.
And Jesus. They receive government grants. And so they have money, whereas just like, you know, the teacher that's being fired has very limited ability to mediate through that currently.
Mm.
They were hired in the first place based on their qualifications and their aptitude to be a good teacher. Mm. So somewhere along the line, the school decided that they were a great person to have to teach their kids that are enrolled in that school. So why them coming out would change that, which is the core premise of why they're there, they're employed in the first place,
mm.
is kind of crazy. So my like hard stance on it is, if you want to discriminate, then stop taking government like public funds and start paying tax.
Yes, well, I agree with you, but they're not going to accept that at all. They say they want it all. Maybe they want the public funding. They would argue that they take they take the pressure off the public system, and they have a right to instruct children in the ways of their faith. And apparently, if you are an openly gay or openly queer in any way teacher, and that goes against the teachings of the faith upon which the school is based, then you're doing bad education. And I just think, yes, we need to say as a society, fuck off, right? There are lots of religious beliefs that are curtailed and prohibited by law, okay, because we are a secular society, and we say that, yes, you have a right to practice your religion within reason, within certain limits. I mean, there just are limits on religious freedom. You can't sacrifice a virgin for your religious beliefs. That's fucking murder, right? And again, you would think this is a workplace issue. I appreciate the fact that people have faith and some religious organizations are based on certain precepts. But, yeah, you're hiring people. This is people's livelihoods, and people have a right to live freely as they are and do their job. I mean, you know, the cases of teachers being fired for such things are relatively rare. I suppose you would say that moving forward, it's much more about whether or not people are going to get hired in the first place. And that seems to be what the religious lobby wants to hang on to, right? The right to refuse to hire someone upon finding out the fact that they have a same-sex partner or a queer in some way.
And that seems to get tricky because, you know, in that it's kind of minority reporting, like, you know, the hiring processes of these organizations, you can't really, no one's ever going to be able to prove that someone wasn't hired because of suspicion that they were, you know, gay or.
Yeah.
So like.
Someone saw you at a musical on the weekend. Explain yourself. What's going on?
So, and it's going to get increasingly harder. You know, we've seen like the stats show that more of Gen Z are identifying as queer and stuff, and they're going to be the workforce. So it's just this, it's a problem that's going to get worse. And it just basically the end product or the current product of it is that more people just continue to live their lives in an uncomfortable way where they don't feel fully accepted by society. And that's fucked. Like it's weird to think about that. The plebiscite was only like not that long ago. It's like very recent memory. And it's kind of sobering to think about that we lived like, you know, as adults in a time where gay marriage wasn't allowed. And, you know, we still have so far to go. I think that points to that fact. And yeah, and I just hate that this is going to ultimately hurt, you know, LGBTQI plus kids probably the most because they're going to get dragged through when they're already at a period of time where they're, you know, thinking about who they are. And we're going to have people out on the front line saying that it's wrong, that it's wrong to feel the way you feel. And that's horrible.
It seems like my read of the debate is that kids seem relatively protected. I don't think even the religious schools are hanging on to the idea that they should be able to expel students for being queer or trans. I think they reckon they've probably lost that argument, and I reckon it seems that even Labor is sort of like, yeah, no, kids stay in the schools. You can't expel kids for that. The last battleground really does seem to be employment of staff that are there. So, yes. And it's funny, I remember I have some vague recollection of a conversation with David Marr years ago, who was saying that it is a little bit funny because, of course, the Catholic Church, for example, would never fire all its queer employees because there are heaps of queer people who work for the Catholic Church, and it could not survive as an organization if they did that, right? Like, lots of people know it's on the DL. They just move on. They, you know, carry on with their bullshit moralizing to the rest of society when, in fact, they know that there are lots of people of the LGBTQI plus community, you know, working for their organization, and without them, they would collapse. So anyway, bit of a fracas around this because, of course, yes, Albanese said, we're not going to pass this unless we get bipartisan support. And the coalition is sort of saying, hang on, we don't know what you want us to agree with you here. Like, we haven't seen this legislation. Calling for bipartisan support without actually showing us what you're actually talking about the legislation is a little bit dodgy. I'd say that's probably fair enough, although it lasted for like a day. I think the day after that sort of hit the news, the coalition were provided with the legislation. We still haven't seen it publicly, but it's apparently been provided to the coalition, and they're looking at that over the weekend, and I guess it'll come into Parliament pretty soon. Dutton, of course, is trying to frame this as, you know, Albanese is dodgy and you can't take him at his word, and, you know, it's not rare. It's not often we say on this podcast, but he's probably pretty right on that particular front. You shouldn't trust Albanese because he's a politician and he'll say shit to maintain his power. Mm-hmm. But yes, this idea, Albanese says that if there's not agreement, if we don't get this bipartisan agreement on this particular issue, now is not the time to have a divisive debate, especially with the rise in anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. What do we make of this slide of argument? The idea that we can't have this culture war debate over this issue now because of, I don't know, because of Hamas, I suppose. Blame everything on Hamas at this point. But, you know, okay, it is a tense time. You know, issues of social cohesion are out there. Is that a good enough excuse to say that we're not going to take on this political fight at all?
I think there's kind of like, it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy that Albo is kind of setting himself into, because, you know, he's saying that he doesn't want to, you know, they're trying to learn from the divisiveness of the voice and these kind of things. But then again, handing, you know, power over to Dutton, who's been shown to not wield that power responsibly when it comes to dealing with discussions around, you know, an oppressed minority or a minority. So to use Islamophobia and anti-Semitism as another kind of protective layer is also feels pretty yucky. Especially again, the way that, like, you know, the government's been pretty shit on their whole policy about what's happening in Gaza. So it just feels like, again, our whole political kind of discourse here is just avoiding what News Corp's going to say on the headlines. And that's just guiding Albo's every move, and he should just stop caring about what they say because they're never going to like him. And maybe he should just be the progressive guy that he once was, you know, 20 years ago, or he acted like he was.
And that means that some people are going to hate you and some people are going to disagree with you. I'm sorry, it's politics. There is no meaningful change that is ever going to happen without, you know, some kind of fallout. And of course, your political enemies and the corporate media who hate you are going to hang shit on you. I mean, but as you say, you cannot let that guide your actions and your positions on these policies, for fuck's sake. You have to take a goddamn position. And this is it's not actually that divisive, quote unquote, right? Like, actually, if you looked at the polling, look at the results of the marriage equality plebiscite, you ask most people in this country, should someone be fired for being gay? I think you will get a very pretty solid answer of like, no, of course not. That's ridiculous, right? Like, the power of the religious lobby, both within the school sector and, you know, more broadly the power of the church, really overstates how out of touch, you know, or how much they speak for the average person of this theoretical issue. You know, if the Labor government made a very reasonable progressive position to say, no, we don't think anyone in this country should be fired, discriminated for because of their gender or sexual identity, they would do quite fine. There would be fights. They will get some shit on it. But I'm sorry, that's politics, I'm afraid. That's sort of the game that you're in, my man.
Yeah. So when they're talking about division or divisiveness,
yes.
it's not within the population. It's not within the yes. electorates.
Yes.
It's just between the two major parties and the News Corp and Daily Mails and Sky News have something to get to gnash their teeth at.
Yes.
So again, let's just get rid of that word.
I've been trying to talk about this a little bit on stage too. Often when something is dismissed as divisive, or when people say we need to come together or whatever, what they're saying is shut up, right? They're saying shut up to anyone who's saying that anything should change, and actually the status quo is fine. That's often the subtext of a lot of this unity and discourse stuff that's out there, right? I mean, you saw it like with the No campaign. It's like they were trying to sell themselves as the uniting vote, and the voice was a voice of division, all that bullshit. And what they're saying is it's divisive to try and change anything in a progressive way. So shut the fuck up, it seems. But I think what also should be underlined here is this idea of if Labor walks away from this reform, again, throwing queer people under the bus, right? The status quo, if it's maintained, if you don't change this law and you don't do anything to protect the rights of queer people in their employment at religious schools, well, guess what? The people could get fired. And so is that not divisive, or is that not cruel, or is that not leaving someone behind, which Labor says they're not about? And we've seen that in the response from Equality Australia and LGBTQ+ groups, right? They're saying this was a promise from the Labor government, and the idea that you were walking away from it unless Peter Dutton agrees with everything you say is fucking ridiculous.
And it's that thing, it doesn't just affect the queer teachers, it affects the entire queer community and the community in general, because we know that we have a government that's going to walk away from standing up
yes.
for that community. That's the truth of the matter, and that's what we're seeing, basically.
And this is a guy who showed us who he was. Remember that out that front page of the Daily Telegraph of like woking class hero, his interview with Joe Hildebrand, and it was just all these bullshit transphobic questions. Throughout the election, he was terrible on trans rights and was, again, playing that News Corp game. What can I say here that will make sure I don't have a hard time, or even get some positive press coverage, as you did in that Daily Telegraph cover when it's like, can men get pregnant? And Albo says no, and all this bullshit. Just cowardly nonsense, bowing to the rights culture war on this sort of bullshit issue and not standing up for what he supposedly believes in.
Fighting Tories is out there fighting Tories every day, tooth and nail. Come on, mate.
You've become the thing that you were fighting. Shout out to Stephen Bates, who is the Green spokesperson on LGBTQIA+ issues. Labor has the numbers with Greens and the crossbench right now. If we're going to outsource essential public services like health, education and housing to religious institutions, they should be expected to follow public standards on anti-discrimination in employment and providing those services. Well fucking said, Stephen. I think that's very well said indeed. So, yes, it'll be interesting. Again, the Law Reform Commission, by the way, recommended doing this, like making these changes, hands down the report on Thursday. Mark Dreyfus comes out and says, this is not a report from the government. This is just a report to the government. We're going to listen to it. And, of course, a recurring theme on Serious Danger is governments getting reports into things. Those reviews and reports say, hey, you should do this slightly progressive thing to make things better. And the government saying, well, we're not going to listen to all those recommendations and actually do the thing that these experts we've asked to look into it recommend we do it. We're just going to do the thing that we're probably already going to do before we called the review. So look forward to that, I suppose.
Kick the can down the road. That's the plan.
Yeah.
This journey that I grew up in was unreal. It was so fun, and we didn't seem to have all these problems. There wasn't all this sort of like the woke stuff's really gone big in Australia.
What's an example of that?
Stuff they're teaching children in school.
Right.
I don't think sexuality and children should be in the same sentence. And I don't think anyone's sexuality is anyone's business. You don't know about mine. I don't know about yours. Why would we? But yeah, that stuff really icks me. And that's no different to things that are happening here either. You know, like I don't understand why you have this like demonic little gremlin high priestess of climatism as the goddess in classrooms, Greta.
Greta Thunberg, okay.
And the kids are all coming home with depression and anxiety. Why would you go to your music lesson or bother doing your homework or get out of bed if you think we're all going to be dead in 5 years anyway? I mean, they told me in class. Greta told me. Why would you bother? Doesn't give anybody hope. And then you've got people like the Tate brothers who get demonized in schools, oddly. They're mentioned a lot, which I find really fascinating.
In Australia.
Everywhere. And in America, actually. As being these terrible people for telling guys to get up, go to the gym, eat well, work hard, look after your family, look after your lady. It's a traditional kind of thing. Those guys bad. They're literally stopping guys from topping themselves. I read all the comments. I'm in my last hours. This video literally stopped me from killing myself, and suicide being the number one cause of death for adult males under 50 in this country. That's a pretty big thing, don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
Why do we glorify a Greta who's, you know, odd and giving children no hope?
You think boys need better role models? Is that your point?
I think boys should stop being told not to be boys. I love men. Men are my friends. A lot of my best friends are male, and I don't think they all need to put on a dress these days to be interesting.
All right, let's finish with some fun, guys. We've all eaten our vegetables. Now it's time for some dessert. We're going to be talking about Holly Valance. I've been amazed at the return of Holly Valance to the political conversation, or the entrance, really. I didn't realise Holly Valance was a political person at all. Jack Toohey, your thoughts, reflections on the fact that former Neighbours star, the singer of Kiss Kiss, is now a regular commenter on the state of world politics. Go.
It is definitely a turn of events. That Kiss Kiss video clip was definitely an awakening for me. and, you know, paved the path for me to be able to work in a religious school as a straight man. That first video that came out of that she was talking about, everyone starts off as a lefty and then wakes up and they're you know, making money or married to a luxury property billionaire and then becomes a conservative. That's just the classic path that all of us take, isn't it? So, look, thank you for the video clip, but I'm going to put my faith in other Neighbours stars like Margot Robbie, unionists, and, you know, someone who's made a $1 billion film about feminism.
Yes.
And also capitalism, but feminism mostly. You know, we can so that's, she's my neighbour. She's my former Neighbours star.
Yes, yes, the good one. There are two wolves inside you, Valance and Robbie. Choose wisely. I mean, yeah, my understanding is she sort of disappeared from pop culture, moved to the UK, and then, as you say, married this billionaire. And what do you know? She's now a full Tory, or not even a Tory. I assume she thinks that the Conservative Party in the UK is too left-wing, and she's getting on board Reform, Reform UK, which is sort of Nigel Farage's last outfit. And when she was at that conservative conference, of that kind of new conservatism conference that Liz Truss was speaking at, and was filmed doing that video, yes, about the evolution to right-wing politics.
And PopCon.
Is that what it's called? Conservatism, that's right.
PopCon. It sounds way more like a Comic-Con than it does. it sounds like something I would go to.
SponCon, yeah. well, thank God that Janet Albritson in the Australian has got to it, and she's on board the Holly Valance train. She's written a piece called Woke Politics Sucks and the Young People Are Awake to It. And we'll try to move through this quickly, but there are so many egregious things being written in this piece that it might take a while. So here we go. An Australian woman called Holly Valance, who lives in London, made news this week for saying Greta Thunberg is a demonic little gremlin high priestess of climatism, making school kids anxious and depressed. She said Australia was so woke, it was mental, schools shouldn't be teaching little children about sexuality, and added that politicians should stand for something. I believe this is a response to, she did, yeah, GB News sit down. I guess, obviously, when she did that video at the PopCon, then, of course, the right wing said, oh, my God, Holly Valance is our new hero. Let's talk to her at length at GB News, the finest journalistic outlet in the British Empire. This is back to Albritton. If you didn't watch Neighbours and had no clue that Valance was a singer too about 20 years ago, join the club. More to the point, why is it breaking news to learn that people of all shapes and sizes are eschewing progressive politics? Now, this is interesting. This is eventually where Albritton is going to head up, which is basically saying, wokeness sucks, guys, and the young people get it. Youth hero Holly Valance. who every young person loves and cherishes and listens to, has finally come out and said what all young people are saying, which is progressivism and wokeness sucks. And as you pointed out, as lots of other people have pointed out, that it could not be more wrong. There has been just an avalanche of news stories and actual polling data clearly showing that millennials and Gen Z are way more progressive than older generations and are staying that way. So this old dictum of if you're not a socialist by 20, you don't have a heart. If you're not a conservative by 50, you don't have a brain. That's all bullshit. This old rule of politics is just clearly breaking down as material conditions for young people suck so much that people, young people are saying, no, we want radical solutions to these radical problems. Just some headlines in recent over the past year. New York Times, millennials and Gen Z are tilting left and staying there. Guardian, millennials aren't getting more right-wing with age. Financial Times, millennials are shattering the oldest rule in politics. The Australian Financial Review, generation left, why the right side of politics has a problem, which opens with the line, young people are now less likely to vote for the coalition than to watch free-to-air TV. The Independent, millennials are becoming less conservative as they age, yada, yada, yada. I mean, we know this, right? Like, we're seeing this everywhere. Young people, if you define that as like everyone 40 and under, are absolutely left wing and are not listening to Holly Valance. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I was thinking before, if you wanted to draw a little cartoon of conservatism falling off a cliff, you could start by tracing the graphs that show the generations getting less conservative over time, because it's a really nice steep drop off there.
Yeah.
I also like the idea that this, the headline of this is woke politics and the young people are awake to it. So we're woke to wokeness.
Yes.
It seems like.
We're so, the real anyway. Woke ones, the ones that are waking up to woke. Oh, fucking hell.
Double woke.
We've got to, I mean, as we see in this piece, I mean, it's all, lost all meaning now, of course. Wokeness is now either just being left wing or literally anyone who doesn't agree with me is woke. And
yeah,
anything that I think is bad or I do not like is now woke and is therefore the worst. But also I think it's important to, you know, point out, and this sort of came up when I was writing my little book, is that the idea that there is this eternal truth that young people start progressive and get more conservative as they older, I mean, that's just not necessarily the case. Again, Thatcher and Reagan won the youth vote. John Howard won the youth vote in 2004. It's very simplistic to sort of say that there is this eternal rule that when you're young, you're left, and when you're old, you become conservative. I mean, you know, mainly people are reacting to material conditions. Thatcher and Reagan sort of ran as these kind of, even though they were conservatives, they were kind of talking about radically changing the status quo, right? By privatizing everything and by unleashing the free market. They were terrible, but they at least were able to tap into this kind of radical sense of freedom and liberty and individualism that clearly appealed to the youth vote at the time. So, yeah, I think it's important to underline that it's not just sort of as simplistic as whoever's on the left the young people will go for straight away, you know.
Well, you see the idea that, you know, you can only be conservative if you have something to conserve. That's often started being, like, said. I see that on X a fair bit. And it's true. Like, you know, why would we vote for policies that would maintain a wealth that we don't currently have?
Yes. And what about our institutions that have served us so well, young people? Why aren't you voting to maintain them? Why do you want to blow up this whole system that has comprehensively fucked you over? I mean, someone like Tim Wilson will regularly say home ownership is terrible. The declining home ownership for young people is really bad because when people buy a house, then they will literally become more conservative, and that's good for us on the right in the Liberal Party. So at least he's honest, I guess. Valance Ni Vukadinovich, who was raised by a single mother in Melbourne and left school at 16 to join the cast of Neighbours, proves the celebrity rule of thumb. The more famous you are, the wankier your views. Okay. Superstar Gwyneth Paltrow, circa 2017, suggested women shove an egg-shaped jade or rose quartz stone up their vagina to help increase vaginal muscle tone, hormonal balance, and feminine energy in general. Mid-range model Elle Macpherson, fuck off Janet Albritton, what the fuck are you talking about? Mid-range, who turns 60 next Friday, told us recently about her health battles, her mantra for aging, and how she's dating again. So basically she's saying, like, celebrities are stupid and dumb, we shouldn't listen to them, and then goes on to say that, hey, what Holly Valance is saying is really interesting and we should listen to her. She told GB News' Christopher Hope that renewables don't make sense, that Australians went mental during COVID with draconian restrictions, and that lots of women want to stay home and care for their kids. Valance went overboard in places. She sounds like she's suffering relevance deprivation or wants her own TV show or a spot in Parliament. Still, I say hooray for a former soapy star I'd never heard of sounding kind of normal. Not terribly bright, to be sure, but smart enough to be woke. And I love this. Again, this person is dumb. I've never heard of them and they're stupid, but they are correct on the one thing that fully endorses my worldview, which is wokeness is bad.
I'm so confused by this article.
Yes.
Is she meant to be the darling of the anti-woke youth, or is she not?
Apparently not. Apparently she's dumb, and yes, and celebrities getting involved in politics whatsoever is stupid, unless, of course, those celebrities are endorsing the political views of the writer. And I won't bore you with the rest of it, but basically she goes on to talk about the fact that, of course, the Spice Girls came out as right-wing, famously in the 90s. They sort of said, yeah, we think Thatcher's a Spice. She would totally be a Spice Girl. Girl power, yeah, and feminism. And Tony Blair sucks. And, of course, Ginger, particularly Jerry Halliwell, and Posh Spice were quite outspoken. They were like, yeah, taxes are bad and girl boss and stuff. And Jen Albritton loves all this, of course. So, again, celebrities are stupid. We shouldn't listen to what they have to say unless, of course, they come out as conservative, in which case they're speaking for the people and they're fantastic. And, I mean, they really flogged this so hard. I mean, Josh Gnosis on Twitter posted three different articles from The Australian all about this Holly Valance interview. Headline, is this the start of post-woke politics? Holly Valance rants against Aussies and Greta Thunberg. Woke politics sucks and the young people are awake to it. Kind of funny how they always argue celebs should stay out of politics until one agrees with them and then they get all the column inches. Fantastic. So Albritton's other evidence that she's supporting is like polling in Canada. She spent a month in Canada, apparently, and the Conservative Party in Canada, you would say, is having something of a surge, and the time is probably running out for Trudeau's Liberal Party. Not that Trudeau is some hero of the left, if you know much about his politics. But she writes, Trudeau is in trouble facing an election next year and even copying it from the left-wing media. Imagine. Wright and Stephen Marsh, for example, wrote in the Globe and the Mail that a new reality is coming. Left-wing will soon mean old-fashioned. Marsh reported on polling that showed the strongest support for Trudeau's Liberal Party now is among boomers. Marsh referenced a poll as early as last August that found nearly 40% of millennial Canadians and 35% of Gen Z Canadians plan to vote for the Conservative Party. Now, I don't know if Janet knows how statistics work, but that means that 60% of millennial Canadians and 35% of Gen Z Canadians are not planning to vote for the Conservatives and presumably are voting for either the Liberals or some kind of further left-wing party. So it's not exactly a closed case, I suppose, when it comes to young people suddenly becoming more right-wing.
They've got to cling on to whatever they can find, right? I mean, that is still quite high, and they have a housing crisis kind of similar to ours in Canada, but it is a bit of a shock that young people might be polling that way, but still majority aren't. So
yeah, totally. And that is fair enough. And I appreciate the fact that it's a higher than you would think vote necessarily of young people. But yes, I mean it depends on how I suppose conservatives and the right is sort of selling themselves. I mean, yes, clearly there is a component of the attraction to a right-wing populism that's coming out of, made up of young people, but still broadly, again, if Janet Albritton had done literally any research whatsoever and actually wanted to inform these views and consider any opinions that don't serve her narrative, and this really well-documented polling data across the board about where young people are at, or literally talk to a young person perhaps who isn't Holly Valance, she might have potentially got a better insight into how things are going. But then, of course, she really brings it home in this last paragraph that made me absolutely furious. Numbers continue to track up for the Tories, except for in the UK, by the way, in which are going to be absolutely wiped out of the next election. But in Canada. So why are young Canadians turning away from so-called progressive politics? Marsh says the answer must lie, at least partly, in the sheer divisiveness of its discourse. Ding, ding, ding. There's that word again. The war in Gaza has become the latest flashpoint of how the left in the West is blowing itself up with grievance-obsessed identity politics. The irony of left-wing zealots supporting Hamas when they would be first against the wall to be shot by these terrorists is surely not lost on younger voters. Okay, so opposing genocide now, Jack, that's identity politics, all right? That's wokeness. The idea that you're looking at what's happening in Gaza and saying this is wrong, actually, killing tens of thousands of innocent civilians, including something like 12,000 kids, that's very woke of you to sort of say that that might be bad and critiquing that in any way. And obviously young people are waking up to that, how silly that is, despite the fact that, again, in all the polling data across the board, not only are majorities of politicians, of populations rather, opposed to Israel's actions in this war on Gaza and the slaughter and the genocide they're doing, but young people are abandoning the Democratic Party in droves over this particular issue.
Yeah. It was just the sentence, the wording of that paragraph is like blood boiling. I mean, the shows of the words blowing... She used the word blowing itself up.
Yes.
In the same sentence that she mentioned the war in Gaza.
Incredible.
And so that just goes to show you how like blind like they are to the reality of how we're feeling as young people and what we're seeing happening there as other young people and families are destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's just this, they've got their blinders on and it's, yeah, at their own peril, the continued peril, you know, the cliff is coming. They're falling off it. They're like the lemmings or whatever, just walking off their cliff into oblivion.
I don't know, Jack. I think a lot of young people are subscribers to The Australian and are reading the Janet Albrechtson articles. They've seen a photo of Holly Valance, their cultural hero, and they've said, Janet Albrechtson is writing about Holly Valance? This I've got to read. And they're locking in straight away. But just that term grievance-obsessed identity. If you cannot have a grievance about someone committing a fucking genocide and that state being armed by our own country that we're complicit in, what are you allowed to have a grievance about, for fuck's sake?
Wokeness.
Wokeness, yes, that's true. That is the worst thing in the world. There is no reason to think it's any different in Australia, you know, except for the evidence and polling, where cynicism or divisive woke politics will not have missed the young. You don't have to be over 40 to realise that those on the left trying to tear down freedom and equality, that's what we love doing on the left, tearing down freedom and equality, are as dangerously nihilistic as when they're trying to tear up basic economics about debt, okay? Both endeavours, if allowed to continue, will hurt the young more than the old. So the next time you come across a young woman showing her midriff and wearing fluffy slides, don't for a second think that she has been hoodwinked by progressive causes. Anyone who underestimates the wisdom of the young is the fool. Now, I also like this because she's sort of saying, hey, guys, don't just assume that a young woman is left-wing, okay? Because here are two examples that buck that trend, i.e. Holly Valance and the Spice Girls. Sure, the vast majority of other young people, and particularly those in the media, are overwhelmingly left-wing and progressive and are sort of saying that what Israel's doing is insane and hate old right-wing fucks. But here are two examples, Holly and Jerry Hallowell, who young people love, that buck that trend. So actually it's actually probably a 50-50 split.
And despite the fact that women particularly are becoming more progressive, yes, as they age, and all this data is showing that as well, so more so than men. But I love that last line, anyone who underestimates the wisdom of the young is the fool. I agree with you.
Yes.
Thank you. That's a really great point. You should apply that to your article that you've just written.
Hey, Janet, you should read Janet and apply her lessons to your own fucking writing.
Delete every word before that sentence and just publish that. It'll be a good lesson for your readers.
Wonderful stuff. Hey, that's our show for this week. Jack, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for stepping in the last minute and helping us out. And yes, I know Emerald really appreciates it and we've loved having you here. Please support Jack's work because you won't be able to see it anywhere. It's going to be a real rarity, provided Meta does its evil business. JackTui.com, that's the place to go for all your Substack and all the content. That's the best one to go for?
Yeah, that's the best place to go. That's going to be where I just cram everything onto the one spot.
Yeah, great.
Or you can come to my DJ sets and I'll just play the videos at you in real time. See, look at this. Neoliberalism. It's destroying everything.
Play a song, you fuckhead. My pill's about to kick in. I don't want to hear about neoliberalism. Or on the socials, at Jack_Tui is the place to go. Again, fantastic content across the board. And yes, share it. Remove the limits on political content on your Meta platform, friends. We need to hear about politics and everything is political. And so you should be able to see everything. Quick shout outs for action. I just want to say today's Palm Sunday. Shout out to everyone who's out there marching for refugee rights and for a more humane Australia. Thank you for what you're doing. We appreciate it very much. And for Greens nerds, if you want to see Janet Rice's final valedictory speech, she's giving it on Tuesday at 6 p.m. She's retiring from Parliament on Friday, April 19th. That's her final day. But this coming Tuesday is her farewell speech. I assume she'll be pretty, she'll fucking serve it up. Janet doesn't mind saying exactly what she thinks. And she's been a star senator and a star member of the party for a very long time. So that's happening this Tuesday, March 26th from 6 p.m. You can watch that speech. Then at 9 p.m., of course, we're all tuning in for the premiere of Tom Ballard, It Is I, on YouTube. Jack Toohey, thanks so much, man. It's been great having you here.
No worries. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Serious danger, Australia.